This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs.
Well, greetings, everybody. It is Thursday, January the 14th. It is time for your inaugural Thursday conversation of the year 2021. Hey, and I've got a treat lined up for you today. I know we've been missing Eric and his insights every week, and so it's easy to kind of lose track of some of the miners that are out there. We know, though, this is going to be another big year in the metals, and as such, it's going to be another big year for the mining shares. And as you've heard me say often in the past, the best thing you can do is get as much high-quality information as possible. It's really hard to do all of this research on your own. But the best place I have always found to go is the great newsletter that you can find at explorationinsights.com. Of course, that was Brent Cook's site. He now has brought in someone to work with him, a gentleman by the name of Joe Mazumdar, and it is a treat to have both of them on the line today. So, gentlemen, thank you. Let's start. Hey, I'm going to start with Brent. Brent, tell us how you're doing, and then I'll let you introduce Joe.
All right, sounds good, Joe. I'm doing fine. It's been an interesting year. I'm glad the last year's over and looking forward to January 22nd. I guess, you know, talking about Exploration Insights, you mentioned this earlier. This is a newsletter I actually purchased from Paul Van Eeden back in early 2009. I'd been working with Paul up until then just as his technical guy. And, you know, after, what, 9 or 10 years of doing this, probably less than that, but I was starting to run out of things to write about. I was looking for someone to help me with it. And I went on a couple of field trips with Joe in Nevada, and he struck me as a very sober analyst who said what he thought and wasn't afraid to say what he thought. And took a couple of years to talk him into it, but now Joe owns the newsletter. He writes the letter. The letter is still about what we, or him now, is buying, selling, and avoiding with his own money. Comes out every Sunday, plus alerts and comments now and again. And the only money we make off of this is what we make from subscribers and our investments. So we're in the same boat as our subscribers in terms of what we own. Since Joe's taken it over, he's revamped the website. It's very good right now. There's a members forum where subscribers can speak to each other and ask us questions. So it's a much improved product. And Joe's got a number of degrees from all the way back to Townsville, Australia, School of Mines in Nevada, and someplace up in Canada as well. So he's got a lot of experience, and I was really glad to bring him on. And I think the letter is much improved since I had it.
Tremendous. Joe, say hello and introduce yourself.
Great. Thanks for having me. Back to Brent's comment, I'd heard about newsletter writers when I worked as an equity analyst. I didn't have much faith in them, but Brent's letter and my conversations with him, basically led me to think that I could do something in this sphere that would be more related to what I wanted to do as opposed to go down a different path. And what Brent had done previously was basically what I wanted to continue doing. I mean, a little bit different in my way because my experience is not completely the same as Brent's, but that sort of, the mantra that he has in terms of keeping it simple with respect to how we make money and, in terms of talking to subscribers who are our number one priority. That's basically what leads the letter and continues to lead the letter going forward.
And again, it's all at explorationinsights.com. That's the place where folks need to go to sign up, correct?
Yes, that's right.
All right, dynamite. Well, as folks at the site know, I solicited names from everybody a couple of days ago asking, if you got one you want me to run past these two recognized experts, please submit it. And I got a nice lengthy list. We'll kind of go through a little lightning round a little bit later on. But first, I'd be crazy if I didn't ask you guys just about the sector in general. You know, we had we're off to such a good start last year. And with prices rallying, the shares were doing great, really rolling out of March with the big declines that we saw, you know, as COVID was kicking in. Now they've been in kind of a really lengthy, kind of technical, maybe, consolidation. The chart still looks okay for when they eventually break out. But boy, this has gone on a lot longer than I certainly thought, this consolidation phase. So I wanted to kind of see what you guys think as we get going here. Do you expect at some point another solid year in general for the mining shares? I don't know. Brent, we'll let you start and then hear from Joe.
Well, my view is we've got a new administration in the U.S. which is going to have impact on the U.S. dollar in terms of money printing and that sort of thing. And there's no doubt we're going to have some big money packages coming out there. I think that's probably a positive for the gold price going forward. And virtually every other country is doing that. So gold should do well on that basis. But on the downside, again, I mentioned we've got some stability and sensibility coming into the White House, which is probably not, you know, decrease the chaos, which is a negative to the gold price. And then with once the vaccine gets rolled out and the COVID-19 is in the rearview mirror, that should be a real positive for the equity markets, not necessarily gold. So it's going to be up and down is what I think, but I do think longer term, gold is going to do well. And I own a bunch of gold stocks and I intend to buy more when the opportunity arises. The other one that I think Joe and I are both keen on, he can comment more, is anything related to the electrification and greening of the world.
Yeah.
And those two metals are mostly copper and, in my view, nickel, which is going to be important for the batteries. Both of them are. So we're focused on those two commodities as well.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about precious metals, like last year, you know, we had like, you know, you could directly correlate what was happening with the gold price with the underlying, negative real interest rates. As that was declining, gold price did well. But the 25-odd% that, you know, gold returned in 2020, and granted, silver did better at about 45-50%. You know, that could have been, I think, a lot better if it wasn't for some people investing more so in Bitcoin, which was up 300% during the same time frame. And then we've had, you know, the risk on mentality. So when we talk about an expansive monetary policy and more stimulus, the equity markets do quite well. And when the equity markets do well, that's almost like a risk on mentality, and gold doesn't do so hot. I think right now where the gold price is, gold producers do quite well still, you know, because a lot of them have reserves at 1250 and the gold price is, you know, 1800, 1900. So generating free cash flow is not a problem for a lot of these companies. And as you've seen, probably as well as we've seen, you know, financing hasn't been an issue for a lot of juniors last year.
Yeah. You know, Brent, back to something you mentioned about kind of the Green New Deal, green economy kind of thing, and you mentioned copper and nickel. Do you think, because silver is such an important part of some of that stuff too, is that part of what is helping silver? But even, I mean, we've seen the silver miners outperform the gold miners here as of late.
I'm not aware that silver is a big ingredient or component of electrification, wind, solar power, that sort of thing. It may be, but I haven't seen anything.
Like solar panels, you know, things like that, where other electronics, I guess, is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I don't know how big a component that is, so I really can't comment. I do say that when the gold price runs, silver often does as well. And the silver fans, if you will, are very fanatical buyers, and they tend to take silver and silver companies higher faster. Whether that's legitimate or not, I don't know, but that seems to be what happens.
Yeah. Joe, do you think that going forward, as you run the newsletter, at least, I don't know, in the months to come, do you foresee an emphasis on kind of basic material miners?
You mean in everything, precious metals as well as...
Yeah, uh-huh. Maybe looking at copper miners and zinc. And,
oh, yeah, definitely copper and nickel. The problem with some of the, because we work on the equity side and we're not in the commodity, we have to look at the equities that do well based on some commodities. The problem with some of these markets are really small, like lithium and cobalt.
Yeah.
It's harder to play an equity in that commodity unless it's a byproduct of what these guys are doing. So yes, absolutely. I'm looking at getting more copper exposure, more nickel exposure, because those commodities have more, they're bigger markets. But you know, we were also, I mean, iron ore did really well last year. It was up 60% as China started coming back online in March. But on an equity, you know, basis, it's hard to get a junior that's exposed to iron ore because it's such a, you know, those kind of mines are so big and require so much investment. It's hard to find a junior that would be exposed to it. It's harder to play that market. So I don't play that market, but still you can see the entire industrial complex of commodities go up based on China's resurgence. But as Brent was pointing out, medium to long-term, like the idea of infrastructural spending potentially by the Biden administration and the medium term, longer term penetration of electric vehicles, those two things will help a lot of these commodities like nickel, copper, and in the interim, palladium, because before you have electric vehicles, you have hybrids, like we have a hybrid, and palladium loading and what you need in the catalytic converter is a lot higher. And so palladium, you know, that can perform well as well.
Okay. And, you know, you guys are making me think. I've had a lot of folks on my site recently mentioning and noted, you know, making note of what's going on in uranium. I just thought of that now. Yeah. Any thoughts there?
Yeah. I mean, we have a uranium stock for a turnaround in the uranium sector, which is taking a lot longer than I thought. So, but we've seen a rebound in uranium companies without a change in the underlying uranium price. And some of that's related to the fact that, you know, if you're going to burn less coal, where are you going to see more power come from? And, you know, some of that diversification might be uranium. And so I think there might be some of that. But also for those U.S.-based companies, the idea of that, you know, that's past, you know, the strategic stockpile where they're going to set aside money to buy uranium domestically has helped U.S. producers like your Energy Fuels.
Yeah. All right. And before we get to some of these names, just something else that's been on my mind. I kind of feel, and I know Brent, you and I have talked about this before, this notion we need to get more institutional excitement. Of course, Robinhood retail excitement would be good. But we need something to generate some momentum, some investment dollars flowing into the sector. You know, I kind of feel like gold and silver in this consolidation phase, that the mining shares are kind of in a show me market, you know? Like the show me state, you know, it's hey, show me you can get back to 2000 in gold, or show me you can get above 30 in silver, and maybe we'll get excited. Brent, I'll ask you that since we've talked about it before. What do you think about that?
Well, certainly historically the mining sector and particularly gold sector has been a destroyer of money.
Yeah.
And so your big funds and people that do that sort of thing, why would they invest in gold when they can buy Apple, Facebook, or whatever,
and go along with
all their friends and competition, and all do quite well. But I do think as the larger mining companies begin showing quarterly increasing cash flow and earnings, that it's going to start showing up on the radar as a very undervalued sector. So I suspect we're going to see more and more funds and the flow of funds come into at least the mining sector over this coming year. What's going to bring retail back in is really discoveries and the increasing metal prices, which again is starting to happen. So it's looking better in terms of money flows coming back into the sector, I think.
You're reminding me, Varick Sprott always likes to say, if you're going to be in this sector, you got to be willing to have a party by yourself, you know, in a room off the side of everybody else.
Yeah, that's true.
a lot of validity to that. All right, one last question. And I think this is probably a good one for Joe with his background. Earlier this week, we had the fourth quarter and the 2020 results from Kirkland Lake, which is a very popular stock. I own it. I know a lot of folks here at TF Metals report on it too. And, you know, they were mentioning about, you know, all the cash flow that they're generating, and they've increased their dividend and they're increasing their share buyback program. Joe, what do you think of that? Is that a good thing for them to be doing? Should they be instead plowing it into more, you know, resources like Detour, you know, where they buy some more metal in the ground? Is it a good strategy, though, to increase institutional awareness? What do you think? What's the right thing for some of these big producers to be doing?
Well, once you get to a stage like of a Newmont or a Barrick, you know, I think what they're finding, because they're so big, you know, generating 4 or 5 million ounces a year of gold, that it's hard to grow from a production standpoint, but it might be easier to grow from a free cash flow per share standpoint. And so when you start generating this free cash flow, not unlike what Kirkland's doing, you know, a lot because of Fosterville and a lot because of, you know, the push in the gold price, is that what do you do with the capital? You got to reinvest it. But when you have a big production profile, you might be reinvesting it just to stand still with respect to your production profile, which means you're just replacing reserves, if you're lucky. And then you say, well, you are generating free cash flow, then what else are you going to do? There's the potential for more M&A. I don't see that potential for big M&A for Newmont and for Barrick, but there is a potential for these mid-tier guys to do more in terms of acquiring other companies, you know, that are potentially undervalued either by shares or cash. The other thing they could do is increase dividends, because that attracts the generalists. And that's what the mid-tiers have lagged at, that they're, hey, am I a growth stock or am I a dividend stock? And now by introducing, hey, I've got more cash flow, I've got bigger production, I'm dual listed, I'm diversified, I can now offer dividends, that will attract more investors. And that's a positive. And so I think the mid-tiers, as they get bigger, like your Kirklands, are sort of becoming those stocks that are now are issued dividends. And dividends, the most important thing about that is sustainability. So people right. got to see that you can actually not just offer a dividend one quarter and say, no, I can't offer you a dividend the next quarter. That ability to show sustainability and free cash flow and a lot dividends is very important.
Yeah. You're making me think of like Kinross reinstituting their dividend after, what, 5 or 7 years or something?
Yeah. Or Pan American, they're basically getting back up to the, you know, the dividend ratio that they had before in terms of payout. And absolutely, that will attract a different sector of people that will be, hey, wow, they can generate free cash flow and they can give me dividends. You know, that'll attract me, you know, because some of these guys aren't about growth. They're about dividends.
At some point, yeah, we're going to get back to wanting some stability, some value that a dividend can provide, rather than just, hey, let's see how far Tesla can take us.
Tesla, you know, when you see something like that go up 700, 800% last year, you go, well, what's the point in buying a junior that's worth 20 million that trades when you feels like, you know, sometimes, you know, so yeah. there's a bit of that going on right now as well.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, you mentioned Pan American Silver. That actually is on the list of names that I've collected. What I thought we would do, because I know I've done this with Brent in the past, is just kind of have a little lightning round in our remaining time. Because I just think you guys know so much about all these different companies. I just get a kick out of it. It's like something I've never heard of, and Brent will say, oh yeah, they've got a mine somewhere, you know, like wherever, and they're doing this and that. You're such an encyclopedic knowledge of the sector and these companies that I always think this is fun to do. So I've got, like I said, I probably 30. I'll just, if you guys are okay with it, I'll just mention the name. If neither of you has anything to say about it, just say pass, check, whatever poker term you want to use. And we'll move on to the next one. If you do have something, you know, just a 20, 30, whatever second summary of what you think, just to give people a little insight would be great. All right. Sound good?
All right. Okay. So this is the point where we make friends and enemies, eh?
Very fast. That's exactly right. This is where people start dropping off the line, canceling my subscription to TF Metals, all that stuff. So try to be nice, Brent, okay? Okay.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, that was rhetorical.
That's right. For crying out loud. Wow. Tough crowd. All right. Let's start. Hey, let's just start there. They're on the list. Pan American Silver. Anybody want to grab that one?
Sure.
Yeah, I know Pan American pretty well. And the reason, I mean, it's exploration insight. So usually we have more non-producing exploration companies or development companies, and we don't tend to go into the bigger companies. But Pan American, for me, presents a very good levered story in the precious metal sector because it's got such a large silver component. And so I think it's a very well-run, managed company. And importantly, it's very levered. It offers dividends, like we were just talking about, to people that want that sort of an investment thesis. But also, it has two embedded options on two major silver projects. You know, one in southern Argentina in Chubut province called Navidad, and the other one would be a restart of the Escobal project in Guatemala. Because of COVID, a lot of these economies globally aren't doing very well and require more foreign direct investment and need to get their people working. Mining can turn that around really quickly, especially something like Escobal in Guatemala. And so Pan American presents you not only leverage to an improving precious metals environment, but also they give you a lot of silver that a lot of companies don't really have. And then also two embedded options in terms of development and restart in those two companies. But also on the exploration side, they actually discovered something on their own ground at La Colorado, which is the La Colorado Skarn. So I think they do well on a lot of fronts, and that's why I continue to hold Pan American.
Cool. I've got a handful here that have been mentioned more than once. So we'll start with those. And I guess a bigger company than maybe some of the others. Well, let's just go from Pan American to First Majestic.
You got anything there, Brent?
It's not something I own. Again, I recognize the leverage to silver.
Yep.
And how well it's promoted. But if we're a real silver company, I'll stick with Pan American.
Okay. Let's see. Coeur?
Yeah. I mean, Coeur is another one of these silver companies that have bought gold assets. So I'm really not sure how much silver they have. But their M&A that they've done of late, over the last few years, is, you know, hasn't turned out that well. So I'm not that confident in the management team.
Fair enough. This one, multiple mentions of this one, a company called Abra Plata. Either of you want to grab that one?
I mean, I know the asset a bit because I used to live in Argentina and I worked in Salta. I lived in Salta, and that project, the Diablillos project, is in Salta, and I used to drive by it. I don't know the asset and what they've done to it since taking it over, but I can say right now, Argentina remains a little bit problematic in terms of working there, just with COVID-19 pandemic, and also investing there because they've had to raise export tariffs for some of these projects to just generate revenues. So, economically, Argentina is not in the best place. So I'm not sure, even if you like the project, you know, taking a company on that's 100% exposed to Argentina right now, I don't know if that's a great move.
Yeah. And I was there many years ago. I think it was Pacific Rim had it.
Yeah. Pac Rim.
There were, you know, I would look into, if I was looking to buy this or own it, what the metallurgical challenges are on the open pit part. And they're drilling deeper now, looking for feeder veins, I guess. Look at the continuity on that. And I also, well, it is on the edge of a salar. So you might want to consider what seeps into an underground or even open pit mine. So those are three things I would look into.
How about a company, I've not heard of this one, called Defiance Silver?
I don't know that one well enough to say anything.
No, it's a silver project down. They've got a long trend. They haven't had much success drilling out new resources there. I mean, it's an interesting target, but I've yet to see something successful enough to interest me.
How about Equinox? Is that somewhere down on the equator?
Well, Equinox is a company that, again, just like Pan American, is very well supported by Ross Beaty. And they've been putting together a lot of assets, you know, technically marginal assets that, focused in on the Americas, whether it's Brazil or the States. And they just reacquired an asset that in a company we own, or I owned a Premier Gold, the Hard Rock project in Northern Ontario. So they consistently have tried to acquire assets that are undervalued and then, work in a rising precious metals environment. And they've done quite well at doing that. So again, well-managed, asset growth in terms of acquisitions. It's very M&A focused. And in the rising gold price environment of last year, it's done quite well.
I know this is one, Brent, you and I have talked about before, and I know a lot of folks own this one on the side as well. Discovery Metals, either of you want to mention that?
That's that project down in Mexico, correct? They got from, what was the name of that company?
They supposedly have, if I remember right, like maybe up to 1 billion ounces in the ground, but it only becomes economical maybe at certain prices.
It's big, low-grade polymetallic deposit. The silver is not that high a grade. There is a structure or a new structural interpretation that the company's doing. They've got good geologists that hopes to define a smaller, higher grade section of that. So far, I haven't seen a lot of size to that higher grade bit. It seems to be confined to a breccia pipe. But to be honest, I haven't looked at it in the past couple of months, so I'm not sure where it's at.
Okay. And, the next one on the list, Brent, I remember you telling me once, the only reason I bought it was because you told me it was such a good company, and that's Great Bear. Either of you have an update there?
It's doing well.
Yes, it is.
I think they've got a legitimate discovery there. I don't have any sort of valuation on it, but it's a fantastic discovery.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the Red Lake District, and, you could pop a lot of high-grade intersections from Red Lake. I mean, the issue in the end will be what, they've drilled a lot, and they got a big, huge program, the question is right now, what does the resource look like, and how continuous is the mineralization, the grade of the continuity of the high grade mineralization there, is it an open pit or is it underground? What does it look like? That sort of thing. And hopefully a resource would help people see that.
Okay. All right. I'll hit you with the remaining names. You guys, if just say pass or check or just say whatever comes to mind. If nothing, we'll just move on to the next one. And I'm just going to go down the list that I have here. Gold Mining Inc.
Gold Mining Inc. Which one is that? Is what asset do they have? I can't remember.
They've got a bunch of stuff scattered from Alaska down to Colombia. It's all marginal to uneconomic, well promoted. If gold goes to $5,000, this should do quite well.
Fair enough. Kenora Land?
I know a bit about that one. Zach Flood's the president, and Zach is one of, in my opinion, the really smart, up-and-coming geologist mining guys in the industry. It's a prospect generators-type company. They've got a number of deals lined up in Alaska and the Abitibi. One copper project's looking small but high grade. But I think, you're really basing it on it's the model there. That's the prospect generator model where they generate good new ideas and bring in partners.
Gotcha. How about Bear Creek?
Oh, I mean, that's the silver project in Peru. That's a good silver levered play, but it's a development stage. So if they ever actually develop it, they'll need a lot of money to do so. But yeah, that's more of a pure silver play, and those do quite well when the silver price is going up. But you probably want to be cautious as to, when they start talking about developing it, then, you'll probably see a big equity raise.
All right. You guys have any current thoughts on Sandstorm?
Yeah, Sandstorm I used to own. Again, well-managed, a great company, royalty exposure. And for those people that are worried about ESG and people investing in ESG companies, you know, the precious metal, in the precious metal sector, the ones that have the lowest ESG risk, according to the analytics, are these royalty companies, and Sandstorm's one of them. My only issue with it was, you know, the growth in production. I saw that, you know, most of it's underpinned by the project in Turkey, and I was kind of wondering when that thing would actually get developed. And so that's one reason I sold it. I did well on it, and it, again, good management team. I have nothing to say against holding it, but I just got off of it. Sold it just because of some risk around growth.
All right,
we ended up with that via Mariana. We owned the project in Turkey, and that was bought by Sandstorm.
There you go. All right. How about a company called Enduro? I don't know anything about that one.
No, you're not alone. I don't either.
All right.
Yep, fast.
All right. Trilogy Metals.
Okay. We own that. I own that. Trilogy Metals, development copper play in Alaska. It didn't do very well last year, even when the copper price was going up in March, just because of COVID-19, they decided not to have a field season up there at the Arctic deposit, at the upper Kobuk mineral properties where they are in Western Alaska, because they were worried that they might bring COVID to those isolated communities.
Sure.
That they work in. But they have planned on generating news flow with a bigger budget this year. Last year, they also got the permits, the federal permits to build the road. And now recently, this week, they got the right of way. And the road's in a 211-mile road off the Dalton Highway that opens up this Ambler Mining District, which is, you know, and it's critical for the entire district that they operate in, that this road gets built. And, you know, now it's been permitted, it's got a right of way. And so that's a big catalyst. I mean, that's a big deal for them.
You bet.
This year they're going to do more drilling. So the problem last year, as much as anything, was the lack of news flow. And now this year they're committed to having more news flow.
How about Dixie Gold? Anything there?
Not on my side. I don't know that one.
Pass.
Never heard of it.
All right. This might have come up before in our discussions, Brent. Alexco?
Yeah, it's a silver play up there in the Yukon, I believe it is. I don't know enough about it, though.
Yeah, it can produce a lot of high grade. I've been to it. It's definitely, for those silver bugs, it works really well. But you really need an elevated silver price because it's a lot of underground mining and high cost.
Like a call on the silver price in a way.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely.
All right. How about these two from that Dr. Hennig's involved in, Novo Resources and Newfound Gold?
We owned Novo Gold and after I went and looked at it, but that was based on what at the time I thought there's a potential for some very fine disseminated gold in with the nuggets. That turned out not to be the case. We sold it, made money. Very interesting project, but given the market cap, I have a hard time justifying that market cap.
Okay.
Newfound Gold, very expensive stock, very overvalued if you look at the data as it is now. But in my opinion, they may be onto something significant. A significant high-grade deposit where no one's found one before. So I like what they're doing. I think they've got a shot at really having something important, but it's really expensive. I don't know what if Joe's got an opinion on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in terms of it being expensive. The idea geologically is that they are looking at the same type of gold mineralization that basically is what Fosterville's about. This very high grade gold associated with antimony. That's basically what they're trying to find, but now in Newfoundland.
Maybe get the run in price downward and you get a little pullback, then maybe that looks a little bit better, I suppose. All right, we're about halfway done, if you guys are okay with that. How about Strike Point? Heard of that one?
Strike Point. I don't know that one, sorry.
Yeah, I'll pass.
All right, this one I think we've discussed before. Exelon, that might be one that's come up with Eric.
They've got that small silver project down in Mexico.
Silver, okay. Any thoughts there at all, Brent?
Yeah, I was there many, many years ago and thought it was too small. It probably still is.
Okay. How about Vizsla?
Vizsla Resources. That's the one in Mexico. They're drilling, I think it's Panuco, the Panuco project. Yeah. Thank you. It's well promoted, and it's definitely a play that people like in a buoyant silver environment. Geologically, they're drilling underneath a lot of the old workings, and basically saying that they didn't test them enough at depth, and that's where a lot of their good gold grades are coming.
SK.
Joe was just up there.
Oh, Joe, how was it?
Sorry, which one?
SK.
SK Mining?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting project. They're looking for the same type of, volcanogenic massive sulfide gold-related system that Skeena has at the old SK Mining project. A lot of upside. Geologically, they have a lot of support from this academic out of where I used to go to school, Colorado School of Mines. And geologically, they're right on in terms of finding it. They've got a very good idea of the district scale opportunities there. Valuation for me is a bit of an issue. But what we got to realize is that gold-rich system that Skeena has is refractory and requires, another plant to basically treat it, and has a lot of arsenic in it. So right now they're at a different stage in Skeena. Skeena's in development, whereas these guys are doing exploration. So mm-hmm. For me, it's just about valuation. Definitely a lot of good people behind it.
Here's one I've never heard of. Fiore, I think it's Fiore? F-I-O-R-E? Fiore. Okay.
Yeah, Fiore. That used to be it's the Pan Gold Project that's in Nevada. It's a small open pit heap leach project that works very well in a rising gold price environment, because these things don't tend to make a lot of money at low prices. They require multiple stages of crushing sometimes, and they get poor recoveries, but you don't really need a lot of upfront investment. So you put a little bit of money in, and in a rising gold price environment, they make a lot of money.
They work.
They're very well levered.
My buddy Ned over in England likes Osisko. What do you guys think?
Which Osisko?
You know what? I think the big one, not the royalty, but what is it, Osisko Mining?
Well, that's the Windfall project?
I don't know. You got me on that one, Joe. I don't own it.
So. Yeah, if it's the one I'm thinking, it's the Windfall project in Quebec. And I think they've drilled about 1 billion meters into that.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. And it's, they've got intersections of high grade. The issue right now is they've drilled so many meters. So, now you're going to hopefully go into development. And they're one of the capital items that always, was a question mark is power. If they have to do it diesel generated, does it actually make sense? There's a power line that goes right by there, but they can't use it because it goes straight to the States. It's a hydro line. So they would have to go, I'm not sure, it's something like 100 kilometers to a substation. And that's very expensive in terms of the upfront capital to get grid power. So that's one of the questions I would look at as well, besides, the development costs and everything else that'll go into that one.
Here's a kind of a change of pace. Canada Silver Cobalt Works.
I know they've been raising money. It's an interesting name. I'll give you that.
Yeah. All right. There's a couple of companies that I've heard Eric mention that kind of in the same area called Tudor and Teuton. Any thoughts there?
This is all BC.
I think so.
Stuff. Yeah. I don't really know the assets well enough to comment, I'm afraid.
Brent?
I've looked at Tudor. Admittedly, it's a large system. It's low grade. Much of it goes under a glacier. An open pit is probably unreasonable given what looks like a really high strip to me. But they probably can pull together some sort of resource, and there you've got your leverage. It's right next to a sea bridge.
Okay.
Not something I don't think Joe would either.
Yeah.
Teuton, okay. I don't know enough about.
All right, just a couple to go. How about a company called West Haven?
Yeah, West Haven, we currently have in the portfolio. It's in close to Merritt, BC, so south central British Columbia. I've been there several times. It's what we'd call a low sulfidation epithermal system, a lot of precious metals. They made a discovery in this place called the South Zone, and they're going a long strike and finding more. Steve, recently at the Franz Zone. The problem is that, you know, the news flow from the drilling has been slow, which is not unusual for a lot of companies because of the COVID-19 impacts on the assay labs. I personally don't think the company has done as good a job in terms of, you know, talking about the regional implications of where they are and the potential, you know, stuff like that in terms of geologically. They do really good sections on the project scale, but I don't think they look at the big scale well enough.
Yeah, that seems to happen quite a bit, it seems. How about Silver Sands Resources?
Oh, yeah. Well, I only know that one because we have shares of Mirasol Resources, and Mirasol Resources has projects in Argentina, and the Virginia project is one that they basically gave to Silver Sands and they got equity. So Mirasol owns 19.9% of this company. So it's a vein system. They're drilling it. They're trying to find extensions of the known resource in Virginia. But really, if they find anything, I don't think it's a standalone. It would have to feed one of the several plants around there, whether it's Pan Americans, Patagonia Gold, or somebody else down there.
Got it. All right. How about a company called, I never know how to pronounce this one. Pretium.
Yeah. I could take that one because we've never owned it. We've always questioned the resource, but they've changed management. And one of my old bosses, who was the CEO for Newmont, is now the chairman. And I think they've done a good job in sort of saying that, hey, as opposed to always, you know, bringing back our production guidance because we didn't get what we thought we were going to get, let's just bring it all the way down such that we can only beat this guidance. And I think that's what they've done. They just give everybody a sort of a lower like expectation with respect to production, and they're looking to beat that, which I think is a great thing. I mean, they generate a lot of free cash flow quarter to quarter, you know, especially in this gold price environment. The development has done really well. I mean, in terms of developing the project where it is. So yeah, I think they've turned around the entire management team. The deposit itself is still problematic because the continuity is really not that good. But I don't own it. But, you know, if a major sees that they can consistently produce a certain amount of ounces at a gold price, then, you know, it could be a takeout target.
All right. And just a couple more. This is another one that got a lot of publicity when it first started trading, called Fosterville South. Brent, you want that one? I figure that might be right up your alley.
Yeah, I've got actually no comment. I haven't been following what they're doing, so I can't.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say personally, it's Fosterville South has been a project that, you know, because of Kirkland and the, you know, and the entire discussion about this high grade, you know, and Kirkland, the Fosterville project, the mine for them is one of the lowest cost mines globally, because it's so high grade and metallurgically it's so clean. So everybody wants to find another one. And so Fosterville South, Kalamazoo, based out of the ASX, all have got, it's a bit of a land grab around there. But it's not an easy deposit to find, especially if you don't have access to underground. So I think it's going to be difficult for people to actually prove out something or discover something like Fosterville just because it's so structurally complex.
Yeah. All right. Lastly, we'll just give you the last two: Pure Gold and K2 Gold. Either of those?
Pure Gold is just poured its first ounce at the Madsen Mine at Red Lake. It's under the Oxygen Capital Group here in Vancouver. It's done well in terms of development. You know, my only question, which they've told me is not a big deal, is that they're going into the development of the project with a lot of the resources based on indicated and not a lot of measured, I think zero measured. The reason that they don't have measured, which is a higher degree of confidence, is because a lot of the infill drilling, or a lot of the old drilling, they haven't been able to incorporate into their resource. But my only question is the continuity there? Can they actually get the reconciliation? So if you own it or want to buy it, that's what I'd be looking at.
And K2, any thoughts there from either of you?
I don't know that one. I'm sorry.
It's they've picked up a project just to the west in the mountains from Death Valley in California. It's an old project. It's been hit a few times by various people. It's going to be a tough one. There's some good intersections, but what we'd need to see is them actually step out from previous work and show that there's more there than what previous explorers found.
I always find it interesting. Here we've talked about resources and projects all the way in the north of Alaska, where it's just cold as hell, to all the way down to Death Valley. The lengths to which we go to find some gold, huh? Well, I tell you, gentlemen, it has been, I always say, and Brent, you know this, I always talk about Exploration Insights as being about the most valuable newsletter you can own, because you just can't do this on your own unless you're really, really qualified. There's money to be made in the sector. And if you're going to do it, you need all the help you can get so that you can focus your efforts. I love doing the lightning round because it proves my point that I didn't run a single one of these names past you guys before we got started. And then all I got to do is say, whatever. And most likely you've got an opinion on it. And I just think that's fantastic. And so hopefully, that proves my point about how valuable Brent's work has always been and how valuable Joe's work will be going forward. Guys, anything else I forgot to mention? Anything you want to tag on here as we wrap up?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of thematics going forward into this year, as Brent pointed out with the Biden presidency. But, also what we'll see is, it seems like the financings that have been happening, it's not just precious metals, even though it's been dominated by that. A lot of these metals that are related to infrastructure spending, electric vehicles, reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, that's potentially good exposure as well for people looking at explorers as well as producers. So that's something else to keep in mind for this year.
Brent?
I'd like to draw your audience's attention to the website, explorationinsights.com. There's a lot of information there that Joe and I put up, video interviews, reports, that sort of thing. Check it out. And if you got questions, get hold of Joe and see what you think.
Probably track Joe down through the website, I would imagine.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Well, guys, thank you. It's just always so valuable when we get a chance to do this stuff. And I learned a lot as well, and I have learned a lot again today. Again, Brent Cook and Joe Mazumdar, explorationinsights.com. Joe, I would imagine we'll get a chance to visit more as the year goes along. Maybe we'll invite Brent. Maybe we'll just let him stay in his rocking chair and take his usual afternoon nap.
Playing volleyball on his rocking chair.
If anybody can do it. All right, guys. Hey, thank you both very much. Thank you for all you do. And hey, let's hope we can have a fun 2021.
Indeed. Thanks, Craig. Really appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for the invite.
And everybody, thank you for listening. We'll try to have another Thursday conversation for you next week.